Life has its ups and downs, and like many of us, I face moments with depression. Music has always helped me find my way through, and I believe it can do the same thing for you. I'm James Cox, and this is the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, a podcast about the healing power of music.
Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your professional handicapped host, James Cox, and I have another interview today. It's so good to actually meet him. So when funk meets rock, swagger meets soul, and energy meets pure electricity, you get a sound that doesn't just play, it moves people. Today's guest is carving out his own lane as he is known as the king of funk rock, blending groove, grit, and attitude into a high-powered, award-winning visuals and a brand new anthem, Four Fingers Get Up. I just listened to it, and it's great, great, great. Making waves right now, he's proving that independent artists can hit on a major level. So get ready for a full conversation and vision with the unapologetic passion, Billy Ray Rock. But first, he is sponsored by J Tattoo Shop, and on May 13th, everybody can go see him in Idaho Falls at the Roadhouse Saloon. Billy Ray, what's going on?
Hey man, it's all just right. Another day in paradise.
Yeah, there you go.
I always say it's a day that I don't need pain meds to not be in pain.
Yes, always always looking up.
It's a good day.
Yeah, because I hear. Any day above the ground is a great day, and I strongly agree with that statement.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, no question about it, brother.
Yes. So where are we contacting you in? What state?
I'm in the state of Washington, man. Okay. I'm out here just outside of Lewiston, Idaho.
Okay.
Little town, and that's where I call home. You know, I've got a couple of kids to go to school out here, so yeah.
Yeah, so you're way, so you're near California, correct? Because Washington, because I always get confused with Washington, D.C., you know.
Yeah, we're in the state of Washington.
Yeah.
I know, I get that. It's funny because I was horrible in geography when I was in school.
Me too.
So there was somebody who said,
yeah.
I know. Yeah. I still am too, yeah. So they say, you know, and you're in Washington or Washington, D.C. when I was a kid.
Right.
And I was like, there's two Washingtons?
Right. It's like, holy hell. Right. It's like, oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know why they decided Washington. Because I think.
And I hear there's a New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, dude. Yeah, there's a New Mexico and a new one, too. So.
Yeah, brand new one.
That's right. Brand new one. So, hey, man. So. I listened to Four Fingers Get Up, okay? So it's true when you said that you blend funk and rock together. And I thought you could, but you proved that it can work, you know, because sometimes genres work together beautifully, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you also include a little bit of techno in it, too.
You know? Yes, I do. Yeah, it's funny with that song. That song kind of grew out of one part. Sometimes you make a beat, you go, man, that's a grooving beat. Then you make another beat, you go, that's a banging beat. And then the trick is sometimes to figure out in your mind if you want to take the first beat and make it its own song and make changes to it, like a bridge and lead to a bridge and all that. And like so with the second beat. But then this was a unique song because I did one beat and then I thought to myself, rather than to make a series of different tracks, which is the way I've always done things, I'm going to make another beat, and I'm going to try to figure out a way to make it fit with this beat and see if I can make all these personalities beats work as one unit. In fact, where it slows down, and a lot of people don't notice when they hear, I came up with the melody for the music when it slows down from that song called 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. I don't know if you heard that. 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. Yeah. Get off the jack. The melody, I kind of got the idea from that to slow it down. A lot of people won't get that reference because that song came out probably before either one of us was born.
But
well, it seems to work, so it's good.
Well, I just love it. I just love it. On Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere you get your music from, I see five tracks. And the song that really resonated with me is it's Them Girls. Love that song. The only reason why I love that song to death is it reminds me of the 90s, you know. That's a song where you can just easily play on a trip, but going to the vacation and roll down and
absolutely it,
and just
now them girls, when I did that song, I wanted something with kind of an island feel.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
And but at the same time, I want to try to get it to relate. Because I did that song during a spring break a few years ago.
Okay.
It was during spring break. It wasn't my spring break, but it was during spring break.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did it, and I thought, well, this might be a good song. So I gave it to a DJ buddy of mine who was spinning in Miami at the time. It was Jacksonville he was spinning. And he played it, and people went nuts. And so I sat on that song for a long time before another DJ buddy of mine said, man, you got to put that out there so people could stream it and whatnot. And so here we are. But no, I really, these songs are like kids to me. I love different things about all of them. You know, that's one I got to, I really love making it, and I'm glad that you enjoy it.
I love it. Yeah, man. Yeah. And it does sound island, you know. It's like that good vibe feeling, and I love every club that feels like good vibe, you know, because good vibe brings positive energy to the soul.
Yeah,
which
means absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're known as the king of funk rock.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So what did you have to be? What did you have to become as a person to grow into that title? Because king is like very like pronounced and like, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's my thing. When I came up in music, and I got a lot of my influences came from a variety of different things. The thing to keep in mind is that, you know, when I was a kid, maybe I'm dating myself, but we lived in a little town. We didn't have a lot of different avenues to hear music, man. We had the radio, and we had one station that played rock music and classic rock at the time. Yeah. You had another station that played soul, and that's kind of all you had. So whether you liked it or not, you had to listen to Elton John and Aerosmith and the Moody Blues and, you know. And so I grew up listening to music that I was kind of maybe in some ways forced to listen to, but I thank God that I was forced to do it, man, because it taught me that there are a lot of great types of music out there. So as I started to play bass guitar and learn all these instruments and things like that, I was influenced by people who really embraced rock. You know, you know, Rick James, for example, embraced it. You know, Rick James and a lot of what he did on stage was really influenced by Kiss. That's where the big boots come from, and the long hair and the pyrotechnics, and you know, and then you had Prince, of course. You know, I say more about him and his relation with rock music. Yeah. You know, he's one of the baddest guitar players on the planet.
Right.
So when I was coming up, man, I was like, man, I do not want to shed the rock side of what I do, but I want to keep it funky and danceable, you know? And so I just kind of kept doing it. And then as the years went by, I noticed a lot of people start to abandon funk music. And I get it, because rap is what it is, and no country is what it is. But I held on to funk, man. I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to be a stubborn bastard about this. So I kept doing funk music. I never forgot the rock that I loved. And then when all was said and done, I finally packaged it together where I can perform it and put together likable songs. I said that everybody else gave up. So what they say in a room full of blind people, the one-eyed man is king. Yeah. Well, everybody else fell to the side. I'm like, well, I guess I'm the only one left. I'm the king.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why I said I'm the king of funk rock. And nobody's out there doing what I'm doing.
No.
So there's nobody out there, you know, trying to be the king one way or another.
Yeah.
But the important thing is that I feel like I'm the only one doing what I'm doing. And when you talk about multi-genre artists, man, you know, there's not a lot of them, you know.
Oh, right.
I mean, the last of them was probably Prince, that could give it to you with some funk R&B. And then turn it on and do a rock track.
Right.
And do them really well.
Yeah.
I think Kravitz does a real good job of it. I mean, there's a few handful out there. I know Cameo, the funk R&B group, did a lot of funk rock and their stuff. But they didn't really call it that.
Right.
You know, and people who know music and stuff, they know about Alligator Woman from Cameo, which is really a punk rock track. You know, so there's a lot of different things out there. But in this modern day we're in, man, nobody can do it with a modern flavor like I do.
Yeah.
And so that's why I jumped in. I go, look, man, I'm the king of funk rock.
There you go.
Somebody want to knock me off the hill? Let's go, bro. Let's go. Come on now.
Let's do it. Yeah. Yeah, because I don't do it, because I was just about to mention that I haven't heard a funk song in years, you know.
Yeah.
The last funk song with the twist I've heard was the Red Hot Chili Peppers on their album One Hot Minute, and I think it was called Roller Coaster. You know,
yeah.
I think that was sampled from George Clinton, if I'm not mistaken. You know,
of course, but I love Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think they do a great job too. Yeah.
See, that was years ago. You know, that was back in the early 2000s. You know.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah,
yeah, and you're right, because no one does. I don't know if you like disco music, and no one's doing disco anymore.
They're not.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just a weird thing, you know. It's weird how some genres get left behind, and then some genres build back up. Which I guess
sure.
disco and funk's going to come back in another 25 years. We don't know.
Yeah. You know, it'll find its way back.
Well, with old is new again, you know, so most people say, you know, so who knows that funk will be the number one genre of all time, 30, 40 years, you know, I don't know.
We know, yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. So, yeah. Here's a great question about you playing live. When someone sees you live for the first time, what do you want them to feel in the first 30 seconds? Because your music is very, very addicting, you know?
Right. Thank you so much. I want them to feel inclusive.
Okay.
Because, and inclusive term, I want them to share that experience with me. You know, there's a lot of artists that go out there and they're like a jukebox. They go out there and they sing and they strum their guitar. You know, I come out from the jump to try to get people involved, but in a way that makes them feel like they're part of the show without being part of the show, if that means instance. See, one of the things that I don't like is when I see artists going out there performing and they sing part of the song and then put the mic to the crowd to sing the rest. I don't do that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, okay. You did not pay a cover to see you did not pay a cover to sing my songs. You paid a cover to see me sing the songs. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I get on stage, sure, if you want to scream along with me, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I want you to hear me sing, because even like people in the front who want to chant the lyrics out and show how proud they are that they know your songs, that's great. But the other 80% of people that are sitting in their seats are like, I showed up to hear you sing, man. I don't want to hear those drunk people in the first 10 rows sing.
Right.
So when I come out and start my show, I want people who are sitting out back to feel like that they're involved in the show as they're watching it. I also want people who are up front to feel like they're involved in the show and watching it. But I want them to see a show.
Right.
And I want them to be involved with it, in the fact that we're sharing that moment together, not so much that they get to sing all my lyrics.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so your live shows are, I would imagine, it's much more fantastic than just your studio production at the house. What I don't like is I don't like going to shows like you just said. I don't like, you know, them to point the mic to me. But more importantly, I don't like them to sound just like their actual CD. You
know? Absolutely.
I've seen Disturbed do that many times, and then I'm like, I can't get into you because you sound like I could save my money and go home and listen to it. You know, I don't need to come here and listen to you know.
And that's the thing, finding that balance, you know.
Yeah.
Because when you're live, you want people to feel like I'm hearing this live. Sometimes when I sing songs live, and I know people know the words. Every now and then, I'll change it up to make it into the moment, you know, the lyrics. But it'll be in little benign parts that they don't really care about, you know. But I hear what you're saying. And I respect that, because I get that a lot in my inboxes from people when they say, hey, man, you know, I watched such and such in concert, and he sounded just like the record, which is great. But I didn't really get a live feel from what they were doing. And so I think that's great. I think the older the artist is, the more they want the studio sound, though.
Yeah.
You know, like when I would listen to Heart, you know, the rock group, and I hear Ann Wilson sing, I want her to hit the same notes she hit on the record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But if it's a group that's a little more current, that's out like now, I want to feel that live.
Yes.
I want to, you know. Yeah. So I totally agree with you there.
Okay, so I read that you're a ghost producer. Correct me if I'm wrong, but a ghost producer is somebody who doesn't want to be known as a producer.
Right.
Am I right about okay. So
yes.
What led you to the idea of you being a ghost producer as opposed to like a known producer, you know? I mean, what was that training like for you?
Well, the big thing that led me to Ghost Productions is you never go out of style, because they never know you did it to begin with.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's the biggie. The other thing that led me to it is I get to privately, it's like it's like being an old dude and secretly helping to perfect Michael Jordan's shot.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then he goes out and wins all these championships. You're like, man, you know, I played a big role in that. I'm okay with knowing that I played a role in it without somebody announcing it on a stage when they win a Grammy or something.
Right.
So the idea of helping people, my whole thing in my adult life has always been about making people feel better after having met me than they were before they met me, okay? Whether it's, you know, they got a better voice to sound to their voice, or whether they made a better song or whatever, you know, just making them, knowing that I had a positive effect on their being, you know? And that's always been my thing. And in Ghost Productions, you get to do that in a really, you know, subtle way. Subtle meaning nobody knew that you did it.
Yeah.
But it's dramatic to the person that I'm doing it for and with.
So being a ghost producer, are there things that you learned from being a producer that helped you being an artist in front of people on the main stage?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you're a ghost producer, you have to teach artists perfection in the studio with regard to timing. And when you preach that for 12 hours in the studio, then it's time for you to then go on stage. You feel compelled to be on point in the way that you perform your shows. You know, there's people out there that people don't give enough credit to, like Madonna is an example.
Right.
Madonna, nobody's going to accuse her of having a voice of Mariah Carey.
No.
But I dare you to find a half dozen notes that Madonna hit wrong during a live performance. Her vocals are always on point. Michael Jackson's another one. You know, all the dancing and spinning and jumping, but show me where Michael Jackson sang out of key.
Right.
You know? You won't find it. No. So I think that people don't give those people enough credit for being the perfectionist on stage. And I think when you're in production, certainly ghost productions especially, you're preaching it and hit the right notes and this and that and the other. And even beyond the notes, you teach people to sing from the heart, you know? Sing like you, emphatic, like you mean it, you know? And when you preach that all the time, then all of a sudden you get thrown on stage to perform in front of people. You can't help but mirror those sentiments in the way you perform. And it helps because people who are watching in the audience come in, this dude is really into what he's doing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then they get more into it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I have 7 guitars here. I don't know how to play any of them, which is weird. Somebody asked me if I'm a collector. I'm like, I think so, but I'm not sure. But I really want to learn how to play guitar. But yeah, but you can play over 10 instruments.
Is that yes.
Right? Yeah,
yes.
I can barely play guitar, man. You're awesome. Yeah. So,
well, I will tell you this, man. In full disclosure, I can play it. When I say I can play it, I don't mean that I'm some kind of a genius on him.
Right.
But if I grabbed a guitar, you go, that guy plays guitarist.
Yeah.
If I play piano, you say, I didn't know that guy was a pianist, but I'm not Prince. I'll do the next guy. You know, Prince is the guy that, you know, you think you play bass guitar and he'll grab it and beat you at it.
You know? Easily, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, ignore that.
Yeah. So when you start out writing the song, what instrument says, hey, I'm over here, pick me out first and do something with me first before any other instrument? What's that instrument that always speaks to you or lets you know that that instrument is ready to go right now, creating the song?
Let me turn this off. Can we do that?
Yeah.
All right. So you're saying what instrument stands out?
Yeah, what instrument immediately speaks to you first? Like, hey, pick me up. We're ready. I'm ready to be the first one to actually make a great song for you. Let's go. Which instrument does that?
It honestly depends on the song that I got in my head. Sometimes I do songs that are driven by the melody. When that happens, it tends to be the piano. If it's a song out of my head that's driven by a groove, and then sometimes it's the drums, sometimes it's the bass guitar. It just depends on what's in my head. You know, I did a song called Time Keeps On, for example. Okay. And that was a melody driven song. And so the first thing that came to my mind with that was a guitar. And then it fed into the keys, and then the drums, and then the bass just kind of filled in the parts.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing how one instrument can instruments can bring life to each other, like collectively and magically, you know. I just think
that's amazing, you know. It's an amazing thing, man. There's songs that I do now, and I sit up and think to myself, man, I remember when that song was just kind of a thought.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it grows and grows. And so then when I get around people and they know the chorus, there's a part of me that's like, man, that came out of my head. You know?
Right. Yeah. Like, wow, I created that. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, it's like, holy crap. You know?
Yeah.
But diving deeper into creating a song, I've had artists on and we talked about this multiple times, but I want to know your thoughts on this. Being a musician is really about, over my years, I've asked musicians about perfection, you know, and what perfection means to them, right? So was there ever something you intentionally left imperfect, because it just makes so much sense to leave it imperfect because nobody's perfect, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, so
you have to learn perfection. I think to the ear of the consumer is a learned skill.
Okay.
For example, when you first start producing, you strive for perfection.
Yeah.
But you don't really truly understand the definition of it. And that's why when you first start producing, you come out with songs that are produced. Too many bells, too many whistles. You have to learn to hear music as though you heard it for the first time almost every time. Because until you get there, you're always going to do a song and go, I can put a cowbell in there. No, I should add a guitar part in there.
Yeah.
And you're going to keep adding. And then what happens is to you, it's a masterpiece. But to somebody who's never heard it, it's just a bunch of notes. So through years, you start to figure out that your ear starts to get to where this is starting to sound like a bunch of noise. And one of the things I do, and any producers out there, this is a tip for you. When you think your song is done, you have to ask yourself, when you want to put in another part, is that really going to make people hate the song if that part is there? Will they even notice?
Yeah.
You know? You might think, oh, yeah, of course they'll hear that ding or the cowbell or whatever. Yeah. Fact of the matter is, it ain't going to make a difference.
Right.
If it's a lot of noise before the cowbell, it's going to be a lot of noise after the cowbell.
Yeah. Right.
You know? So you have to, it's a learned skill, though.
Yeah. And I'm sure when a lot of the artists re-record your album and put that cowbell in there, like you said, no one's really going to know, you know, except for you.
They're going to notice. You know? They're not going to. You know, a funny thing about music when you produce it, it's like a full circle. So you make this beat, right? And you go, oh, this song is great. So you take it and you mix it perfectly. And you send it out there and people hear it. And they go, oh, man, the vocal's a little loud. Or the bass is a little low. So, oh, I got to remix it. So you do all this mangling to it. So then you send it to a DJ. The DJ goes to the nightclub and plays it. Most of the nightclubs they play it on, even though they might have world-class systems, it's being played for a bunch of drunk people who could give a shit less whether you put that cowbell in there or not, or whether the vocals are too loud.
Right, yeah.
They don't even know. They're drinking and dancing, right? So you went through all that for that. The people that stress you about mixes and whether or not, you know, the keys are too loud and all that kind of stuff, it's not normal people. Normal people don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Who does care about it is nerds at the radio station. You know,
that, right? Yeah.
Those are the ones that are like, that's horribly mixed. He needs to turn that guitar down. But even people driving around in their cars don't give two shits.
Yeah.
They're headed to work. They either like the song or they don't. I've never heard somebody hear a song on the radio and go, yeah, it's good. But that third vocal on the second chorus could probably have some reverb in it. It would be better.
Right.
I've never heard anybody say that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just industry knuckleheads.
Yeah. Did I reach it? Okay, so when I looked you up, I thought I saw you were featured on Yellowstone. Now that's a show.
Correct? Yes. Yeah, I was on season 5, yeah.
Okay. So how did that, I know that what's the word I'm looking for? How did that work out for you? Because I know that's a huge show with big listeners. I mean, like, you know.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I live out here not that far away from where they're filming in Helena, Montana.
Okay.
And, you know, my manager contacted me and said, hey, look, here's an opportunity. And I watched the show before, didn't think, you know, I thought it was a great show, but I thought I'd never want up on it.
Right, exactly.
And then, so they called me up and, you know, and said, you got to make the drive out. I did, wound up getting on it. And, you know, it's funny because I was in the courtroom scene and it's just, you know, being around, that thing is such a machine. You know, people don't realize when you're on a super successful show like that, it's a machine. You had extras running around everywhere. You had, you know, the West, the guy that plays Jamie, was there and met, talked, hung out with him. It's just a machine, and you stand in awe because I've been to video music shoots before, and shot videos myself.
Yeah.
And that's like a hobby compared to the Yellowstone.
Right, exactly,
yeah. So I don't even want to know what a Star Wars film is like when they're filming. That's kind of,
That was made back in the 80s, you know? I can't imagine. you know? So, yeah. If you don't mind, I would love to do like a lightning round with you. Is that
sure.
Okay? All right, please. Perfect. All right, so first word, first sentence, whatever you want to say. Funk or rock? What hits your soul harder?
Funk.
Funk, okay. One word to describe your show, your live shows.
Energetic.
Okay. Crowd of 50 or crowd of 50,000?
50.
Okay. Now, okay. So I'm going to go off of that with you. With some artists, they prefer larger crowds, and some prefer, you know, lesser crowd. Does that really matter? I mean, in the long run, you know. I mean, does that matter? I guess it matters between musician and musician, but you're playing live in front of people. You know, I mean, does it really matter how many?
It doesn't matter for me. I play with as much energy for 20 people as I did for 20,000.
Yeah.
But having said that, man, I got to tell you, when you play in front of 20,000 people, and I have, when you play in front of 20,000 people, it's so many people, it's like a overblown sound check. Because you can't connect with, you know,
everybody.
Somebody in row 200. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so you're jumping around, you're playing to your monitors, and generally the first two or three rows. So even though when you get to 20,000 people, it's 20,000 people, but for you on the stage, you're really playing to the front row.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, you know, that's maybe, I don't know, a couple hundred people at best.
Right.
You know, and and there's an echo from what you play and how it takes to get out there and come back to you. So it doesn't feel real, okay. You know?
Yeah. Okay. First thing you feel when you step on that stage. First thing.
Nervous.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess that goes away with an instance, or do you have to like kind of get used to the...
I stay nervous until I get about halfway through my set. And okay. I use those nerves to fuel that perfection, so to speak.
Oh, okay. You know? Perfect. Okay, so this is a tough one, okay? The one instrument you could never give up. If you had to give up every instrument in the world except for one, what would that be?
Bass guitar.
Love it. Yeah. Because bass is like the backbone of the songs.
It is. Yeah, and it's something I get, I play, I understand, I identify with.
Yeah.
I'm one of these guys, honestly, man, that I'm not the best at a lot of little things, but they say I'm great at a totality of everything. That right. makes any sense.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to outplay you on bass. I'm not going to outplay you on guitar. But I'm not going to sing and have the girls throw their panties on stage.
Right.
Like, I'm not that dude. But when you put it all together, you know, and this is why I stand in admiration of, you know, the people that I idol. Prince could sing a girl panties off.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
But he can also play guitar. It's like a top five guitarist in the world.
Yeah.
So you can, you know. Say Rick, say with a lot of people, you know, Maurice White, Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, he could sing a girl's panties off,
yeah,
you know, yeah. And he was a big, you know, percussionist, of course,
right?
You know, so
right.
I mean, you know, for me, like, I don't, you know, I look at myself in the totality as an entertainer, you know, because I think that I'm meant to entertain people, not to woo them on a particular instrument.
Right, you right. Know. Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to.
That's kind of my space. Yeah.
We talked about it earlier, but I think I know the answer to this: studio perfection or raw live energy.
You say studio perfection
or raw live energy? Yeah.
Raw live energy.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. There's nothing like being with the crowd. I guess for you, it's like looking outside and seeing all those people loving your song, the songs that you create, you know, that you can't beat with anything, you know? So,
that's why when guys get up there and they lip sync songs, it drives me crazy.
Right. Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Song that always gets you hyped before a show.
Oh man!
I guess you could talk about like a different like
probably, like... probably. Got Yourself a Gun, Nas will do it.
Okay.
You know, yeah. There's just a few songs, but they're mostly old school songs that a lot of people probably haven't even heard of.
Right.
You know. But there's a few songs. That's one of them, though, that I'll sometimes play. Can You Hear Me? Or You Can't See Me, Tupac will do it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. You know, there's a few songs like that. Yeah.
Nice.
DMX, I Gotta Make a Move.
Yeah. Okay.
I Gotta Make a Move to Make It Soon. You know, that one will get it. There's quite
a few of them, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Favorite city you performed in or want to?
I think I performed in just about every city, but
yeah.
Ooh, favorite would probably be Tucson.
Okay.
I did it a number of years ago, and what I liked about Tucson is they had a real good mix of people that appreciate a lot of different types of music.
Right.
And so hardly could I go into a song without most of the crowd. Oh my God, that's an incredible beat or that's an incredible song or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Tucson would probably be my favorite to perform in. Yeah.
Okay. Now this next one is a hard one. but I'm pretty sure you're going to laugh at this. Who would win in a funk off, you or your biggest influence of all time?
In a funk off?
Yeah.
They would win.
They would win. Oh,
Cramps, Rick, I mean, Larry Blackman, Cameo, those guys, they created what it is that I'm call myself trying to do.
Right.
You know, I can't fight that. Roger, Zapp, those guys, man, I can't, you know.
Do you think it's possible that you can teach them like something they never heard of before?
Yeah. But it would probably have more to do with, you know, the modernization of what it is they created. Because I think when you make music, sometimes what happens is you get locked into a certain kind of bubble of what it sounds like. Right. And as times go by, people's taste for music goes by.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when my kids just got home.
Oh, that's great.
It's a lot of things that happen as music progresses that those guys from back in the day, not that they wouldn't know, but it's impossible to know because you come from a different era, you know? And I try to learn still, even from people who make music now, to keep my stuff modern enough so that people who were maybe not born when I got my influences can appreciate what I do still.
Right. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. Two more questions and then we'll let you go. But I do love you and thank you and beg you to come back.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So your new single, which came out this year, March 6th, great song.
Yep.
Four Fingers Get Up. Okay. Yep. When somebody hears that and the song is over, what do you hope immediately? What's the one thing to hope they do immediately after the song ends?
I want them, other than play it again.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well,
but,
yeah.
I want them to walk away from my song feeling good.
Okay, yeah.
And that's why when one of the last lines is, we're doing it all night. Mm-hmm. I want them to have the song end. And for them to have that good feeling, man, this is a good feeling. See, look, I make music, man, because I feel like music is the only thing you could do where the minute a song comes on, you remember where you were when it came out.
Yeah.
You remember, you know, what you were doing, what point in your life. There's no other thing that you can have that kind of reference. If I said to somebody, hey, what were you doing in June of 2005? They'd say, I have no idea.
Right.
But if I name the song that came up, then they go, oh, boom. Yeah, that was back in 2005.
Yeah, man.
I was in college and I was, you know. So music provides that reference. And I make music so that people can timestamp their life and bring about maybe good memories, hopefully, during that time, you know.
Yeah. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what's the legacy of Billy Ray Rock?
Somebody who gave them music of all genres. Somebody who would refuse to be pigeonholed. Man, I got songs. At one point, I was doing EDM, and I changed my name to Day One, you know? And I made a lot of EDM songs, man. And the reason why I'm not doing EDM now is that every time I talk to a festival organizer, they thought I was a DJ.
Oh, no, yeah. You know? Right.
Yeah. And so I was like, I don't DJ, man. I go, I perform my songs. I was like, we thought you were going to DJ, but we love your music.
Right.
So I want people to love my music on each song on its own merits. You know, I come from an era, people do this now. They'll get a hit record, and the next four songs sounds exactly like the hit record.
Right.
And people go, it sounds just like the last song.
Yeah.
And it's because those artists are afraid if they do something much different, nobody's going to buy it, you know? But if you listen to the song, Them Girls, for example, and then play Four Fingers, you think it was by two different people.
Right.
You know? And likewise with Let's Get It and some other rock songs that I've done, There's a song I do called Somebody's Watching You, or which is, you know, an EDM song, or We Going Out, which is another EDM song.
Right.
But then you go back to, you know, You Got It, which is as funk as it get, you know. So I just, you know, I just want people to think years from now that this guy made music in a way that he wanted each song to stand on his own merits.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, we're going to give you a couple of shout outs here. Everybody can go to BillyRayRock.com, and he has on his merchandise thing, it says you can okay, so they'll cash app you.
Yeah, if they want like a t-shirt, I got bumpers. You can cash app me at, you know, Billy Ray, whatever it is. I don't know what
it is. It's fine. Yeah, it's BillyRayRock.com, everybody. And he's on YouTube, Instagram, X, and you can catch him with email too. So yeah, man, we do love you here, honestly. And we, yeah.
And one thing, and let me, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Let me get a shout out to my kid's mom. You know, she fought and lost her battle with cancer, of course. You know, she's not with us anymore, man. But, you know, rest in peace, Clint Palmer. Love you, baby. I know you're watching me do this, and I know you're rooting for me in my corner. Also, shout out to my kids, of course. They don't want to be near any cameras. They're just all about anonymity.
There you go.
Shout out to the family of, you know, my girl, who, when she passed away, was there for our family in so many ways. You all know who you are, you know, from Ashley David to, you know, Aunt Marty, Uncle Al, Brenda, you know, Lenny, you know, everybody, David, Larry. I can go through a bunch of names of people that I'm forever grateful for being there, you know, for me. And I don't want to forget Marcy, by the way. She's a sweetheart. She's my one of my girl's best friends. But yeah, I just shout out to all of them, man, for being there and you know, helping to be a part of keeping my family emotional health right, man, because it was a tough time. That said, man, I'm turning a new chapter and I'm kind of out there and talking to people. And I will end by saying this. I hate the single life. It's crazy women out there, bro. They're crazy. They're
right.
Crazy.
Well, I need a girlfriend. Anyways. So if you find them, send them over to me, man. Because I really need somebody, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. But
they're crazy, bro.
They're crazy sometimes, you know. But it's okay. It's okay. But everybody can go to Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer. And I think some other Amazon Music or you know, everything. And download his songs. But most importantly, go to BillyRayRock.com and order a shirt. You know? I mean, that helps them like 10,000 times more than any streaming site would, y'all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on, sir.
All right, brother.
I greatly love you.
Thank
appreciate
you, man.
You. All right.
And appreciate
with that,
it, brother.
And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode today. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.